Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome, everybody, to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I am joined in studio by Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Ed.
And Chris Woodward, news reporter extraordinaire for American Family News. Good morning.
Good morning.
See, no insults, you know, no jokes.
I value my job.
No jokes about,
Carpenters.
The carpenters.
Wait a minute, we're 45 seconds into the program.
Prematurely gray or any of those things. So no jokes. You do actually do a good job.
Thank you.
For us.
Very much. I try. And I am brushing up on Carpenter's songs.
Are you really? Like what?
I'm trying to familiarize myself with lyrics and names of tracks. That way I can answer trivia next time.
Okay, like what?
1 minute into the show.
Okay. Hey, listen, I don't think I could. Tim can. Tim
rainy
can.
Days and Mondays.
Oh, there rainy. You. There you go.
Not Waylon Jennings, kids.
I can. I recognize songs when I hear them, but I can't recall with very few exceptions music when I was growing up. But I remember it. And but guys like you and Tim. Tim has got an encyclopedic memory of the 60s and 70s music.
For me, it was necessary because that late teens, early 20s, I was a DJ.
Yeah, disc jockey.
6 hours programs on the air live.
Oof.
I just got to say, I just wanted to take a minute, Ed, and say I appreciate that you love me for what I am.
Yes, but love you too much to let you stay that way.
All right.
Top of the world.
Something that was something.
You're a superstar biblical, in my book.
But biblical. Wow.
I'm going to start slipping in Carpenter's song titles.
Is that what you're doing?
Yes.
I thought
it was my ticket to ride and I'm taking it.
I thought it was insincere flattery. So, all right, Chris.
It's time to move on from this masquerade.
We've had a busy weekend with all kinds of things going on. Mm-hmm. So, it's Monday morning. Let's get started going over it for the sake of our listeners.
Yes, many people are aware of this, but for those that might have watched some college football games over the weekend and didn't tune into some news networks, the Family Research Council and Family Research Council Action, the political arm of FRC up there in Washington, D.C., they had the Pray Vote Stand Summit at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C., big event, a lot of panel discussions from kind of a who's who of people we've had on the show. We've had sound bites from these people. They've been on Fox, Newsmax, what have you. But a lot of people came by and talked about the importance of getting good Supreme Court justices, parental rights. We can't have men and women sports. You name it, they were there talking about the issues. And we have some sound bites today. But one big takeaway from the summit was the straw poll that FRC and FRC Action, and by the way, AFA Action was a sponsor of the Pray Vote Stand Summit. Donald Trump was the winner of the Pray Vote Stand Summit straw poll, had nearly 64% of the vote. Ron DeSantis came in second, but a distant second. Governor DeSantis had about 27.3%, and the list goes on from there. Interestingly enough, guys, Joe Biden at the socially conservative Pray Vote Stand Summit had 5 votes, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had 3. Our apologies to Doug Burgum, Chris Christie, and Asa Hutchinson, who got no votes.
So the two Democrats got more votes than some of the Republicans. I'm guessing that the people who voted for Joe Biden and RFK Jr. were what you would call plants.
Yes.
They were there to check out what was going on. Mm-hmm. And when it was time to cast their straw vote, they voted their hearts.
Yeah, there were liberal news outlets there, liberal reporters. One guy behind me, when somebody came through press row asking what the Wi-Fi password was, this guy, and I think we should pray for this gentleman because he needs Jesus. He smart aleckly said, well, there's no Wi-Fi, but if we all pray hard enough, we can get it. And there was a collective groan from the people in press row there. So bless his heart in the way that we say it sometimes here in the South.
But we mean it for real, not yes. like when people say bless his heart.
He does need Jesus, as we all do.
Yeah, that's right. So, you had the privilege of going. You were there live. I'm not surprised, Fred, that President Trump won the straw poll, and we're going to get some more input from Chris here in just a second about how the atmosphere changed when the former president showed up to speak. But it certainly does appear that the nomination is Trump's to lose.
No question about it. And, you know, there are people in the conservative evangelical community who have expressed concerns with certain characteristics of the former president. But what you cannot debate any longer, this is a man that still holds sway with the majority of conservatives in this country.
Right.
And, you know, poll after poll, the results of the straw poll at the weekend event did not surprise me at all. It's just a given now, whether he's in Iowa or whether, you know, he's in New Hampshire or wherever he goes, wherever a poll is done, secular media does polls, Donald Trump comes out, not just by a few points.
Right.
But we're talking 30 and 40 points over the second, which is usually Governor DeSantis.
Right.
And then all the rest, I thought Nikki Haley was going to climb a bit. She did. She had a good debate.
Right.
Back there, what, 3 weeks ago or so? Mm-hmm. The next debate is this Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I thought she had a pretty good debate. She got a little bit of a bump there, but most of the others are still in single digit. So if you're looking at it, and unless something drastic happens, we're going to go into the primaries and the caucuses in Iowa in January, February, March, and something drastic will have to happen. But I believe unless that drastic thing happens, Donald Trump is going to be out in front, as they say, by a country mile.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, Chris, in our story meeting that Governor DeSantis was well-received at this FRC event. Again, you mentioned also that we're a co-sponsor of that, and we had been almost every year up through COVID. I think a COVID year and a couple of years they didn't have the event. He was well-received, but then it became a Trump rally at some point when he showed up.
Yeah, we'll take you back to Friday afternoon. They started the presidential candidates, and not all of them were in attendance. The presidential candidates that spoke were Mike Pence, Governor DeSantis, Vivek Ramaswamy, and then Donald Trump in that order. Pence was early afternoon Friday. He was followed by Ben Carson. They had some other people come on, then DeSantis. Vivek Ramaswamy was in between DeSantis and Trump, if that says anything. I don't know if that was coincidental. I found it interesting. Yep. You didn't have them back-to-back, let's put it that way. And when DeSantis came out, he got a huge standing ovation. A lot of people were cheering for him. He was well-liked. And then the Trump speech comes out. And a lot of people, which had already cheered Trump's name and just mentions of Donald Trump throughout Friday's events, Trump comes out. And just to kind of get you there, I've got a bit of audio here. He comes out to Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA. And there's a huge round of applause, and Trump spoke from after that. So just to kind of give our listeners an idea of the Trump event, hundreds more people, it seemed like, just poured in. They were bringing in chairs, a lot of people standing up, people holding Trump flags. But here's the audio clip two.
God bless the
Thank you very much. This is a big crowd of people.
That might have been why Trump won the straw poll with 64% of the vote.
Well, he powers crowds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just his speaking ability. I mean, when he kind of goes off script, he can he does pretty well ad-libbing, just off the top of his head kind of thing. But, you know, there are still a lot of people who remember what I consider a successful term in office.
Mm-hmm.
They also remember what they believe was, at the very least, we'll put it mildly, shenanigans in the 2020 election. A lot of people think outright steal, whatever. But then also, I think people are emotionally invested in Trump because they believe he's being done wrong. Mm-hmm. Poor English, but done wrong.
Right.
The victim of continual since 2015, continual harassment by the deep state. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all of those things together make him emotionally compelling for people who are already there at a conservative rally and conference or whatever, however you define it.
Yeah. He mentioned several times that he was robbed of the election in 2020. He said, quote, "We had an incredible campaign in 2016, again in 2020. What happened there?" He went on to say, "We're going to have the most successful election coming up." And he kept talking about, he said, Joe Biden is, quote, "crooked. We're going to have to, we are going to defeat crooked Joe Biden." Interestingly enough, he said, "I used to say Hillary Clinton was crooked, but I don't like to use the same nickname for more than one people. So I now refer to her as beautiful Hillary, and I'm calling him crooked Joe." That got a lot of response, a lot of laughter.
She's beautiful Hillary because she's not running.
Yes.
So that's
true. But he did talk again from time to time about how, you know, he was robbed. He is, in his mind, convinced that he won the election in 2020. And
well,
he,
it's not just in his mind. He was on, I know we're going to go to this in just a little bit, but he was over the weekend on NBC News Meet the Press with host Kristen Welker. He said, "No, we won."
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah.
he doesn't mince words. He believes he was robbed and the election was stolen.
Yeah, and he believes we're going to win again. That's how he said it in the Pray Vote Stand Summit. Some of the things that he talked about, he denounced Biden and his handling of the economy, the disastrous Iran nuclear deal, the fact that we're not drilling for oil, we're wanting to do this and that. All these things that have made things more expensive for Americans, he says, I'm going to fix when I get in there. And I'm paraphrasing what he's saying.
You know, Fred, it's... To me, it is smart politics to go after Biden.
Yeah.
We've said that on this show mm-hmm. many times. Now, I know he has criticisms for Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis criticized him in an interview, I think, over the weekend. But it is very smart politics for any of these candidates, but especially Donald Trump, to go after Biden, because that reminds people about how hard our lives have been mm-hmm. since Joe Biden took office.
Yeah, and it's very obvious. I think, you know, Donald Trump understands where 70, 80 million Americans are right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the nonpartisan polling that's done out there, when you look at the economic polling that's being done right now, you go and you fill up your car with gas. It's a whole lot more now than was when Donald Trump was president.
Right.
That's the bottom line. Your grocery bills. We talk about this in the newsroom amongst ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, you put 17 items in a grocery cart and it costs you $70.
Yeah.
So he's dealing with the reality that America is dealing with right now. And America is getting very scared of the Biden administration. They're talking about climate change agenda. They're talking about taking away your gas stoves.
Right.
They're talking about forcing you, basically, into electric vehicles.
Yeah, which, heating costs going up. We're not even talking about filling up your car, which you mentioned. People are starting, if they haven't been up to now, but they are certainly paying attention to what's going on across the border.
Mm-hmm.
Coming across the border, saw a story just before coming on the air. We may deal with that, this story, if we get time. Chinese spies.
Yes.
And potential saboteurs coming into our country. 18,000 at least,
mm-hmm.
Coming across that southern border, where people are paying attention to local stories about crime.
Yes.
In their communities. Mm. They're seeing the images of, you know, zombie drug addicts and homelessness and stores being robbed, people mm-hmm. filling up trash bags and just walking out.
Mm-hmm.
People are paying attention to all this.
Well, there's video this morning, just to go back to the border angle to this, video this morning of actually, you know, coal cars, that trains.
Yeah.
Filled with people. These are coal cars that normally would have coal in them coming up from Mexico. It's on its way right now.
Right.
And they're filled with people, and they are celebrating because you know why they're celebrating? It's a breeze to get across the border.
And they're going to a great country.
Yes. And by the way, it's pointed out by somebody on the weekend that the Biden administration likes to talk about apprehensions.
Yeah.
Apprehensions doesn't mean they arrest them and put them back across the border.
Right.
Got to understand this, folks. Apprehensions when the Biden administration talks about it is we're doing paperwork.
Yeah.
And when the paperwork is done, and there was video of this on Friday, when the paperwork is done, there was one guy, I don't know what country he came from, he asked the border agent, can I go to Chicago? He said, border agent says you can go anywhere you want.
Yeah.
There was a family, I'm not sure, it was from Guatemala, come across the border, mom, dad, kids. Border Patrol drops them off at a Dollar General parking lot. Got the paperwork. Now you don't have to show up for a court date for 5 years from now.
Yeah.
It's so people understand this. There's not all the news agencies are doing it, but people understand most of the news agencies basically are card-carrying Democrats.
Right.
They understand that. They understand a justice system that has gone after Donald Trump. You know, it's just amazing. They're showing it right now, that video.
The train.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So people, if you don't like Donald Trump, you may be for one of the other candidates, you have to admit there is no other high-profile politician where a justice system has gone after that individual.
Right.
And I think some people are actually very scared of what's going on out there. A justice system not only going after Donald Trump, but going after parents who show up at school board meetings.
Pro-life.
Pro-life people. Yep. A pro-life person, his house is surrounded by heavy weapon FBI agents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they're seeing these kinds of things and they're saying, this America scares me.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump is a guy, in their minds, he's the guy on the white horse.
Right, right.
And he's coming to the rescue.
Interestingly enough, at the end of Trump's remarks, the song Hold On, I'm Coming played. And I don't think that was by mistake. Talking about the border security there, Trump did say, and I quote, upon my inauguration, I will terminate every open border policy. And that got a lot of applause.
Well, that was the issue that catapulted him to the front of the pack in 2016, might have been the lead up, might have been 2015 in the lead up in one of the debates. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if it was a primary debate in the fall of 2015, but I'm going to shut down the border. I'm going to build the wall. Mexico is going to pay for it. That really set him apart.
Mm-hmm.
And that was more than anything else at the outset, that was the issue that catapulted him to the front of the pack. So it is on the minds of a lot of people, and more so now in 2023.
Yeah, a number of governors, not just Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis, but a number of governors have talked about the border problems being America's problems, because what's happening in just, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, what have you, those are issues that are spilling over into every state, which is why you have people like Montana's Attorney General saying that this is a problem and we're having to deal with it. And Montana, if you're not familiar with it, nowhere near the southern border.
Right.
So everything that's coming across the southern border now is going to affect you somehow, some way, even if you live in Maine.
And these big city mayors, we've talked about this, done it to death, but these big city mayors, they're complaining because those chickens have come home to roost in their blue cities. Very often in blue states.
Yeah, you've got New York City Mayor Eric Adams. They're now cutting services and pay and overtime benefits for like civil servants to try to make sure that the illegal immigrants that have now found themselves somehow, some way in New York City have the resources they need. So a lot of people are saying a few years ago you loved being a sanctuary city. Now you are. And instead of embracing it, you're asking the federal government to help, which is what people on the right have been saying for years now.
Right. So what else did you notice at the summit? What, a Pray Vote Stand?
The Pray Vote Stand Summit, yeah. A lot of people were very concerned about things like Biden and others wanting to force gender manipulation on the American people, and maybe even at their state taxpayer expense. I've got a bit of an exchange here between Tony Perkins, head of FRC and FRC Action, talking to Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey on Missouri's efforts to try to fight the government here and enforce gender manipulation ban of minors. Clip 4.
What would you recommend to these other states?
Yeah, have the courage to call this what it is. It is not healthcare. There's nothing gender affirming about what is going on at these clinics. It is the sterilization of children and the detransitioners. My heart goes out to them. They are victims of a system. So having the courage to call this what it is, to use the power of the apparatus of your state statutes to go after the wrongdoers and hold them accountable.
Well, I certainly agree with that. And Fred, you know, he mentioned detransitioners. Mm-hmm. Going forward, this is going to become a bigger and bigger story as people who were influenced, manipulated, into quote unquote transitioning, even getting the surgeries.
Yes.
In some cases, but certainly being given drugs, that puberty blockers and so on and so forth. But these transitioners, this happened to them when they are often very young.
Yes.
Or teenagers. And I will admit, when I was a teenager, I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you think you do. But then when they get older and they start realizing these changes are permanent, they are heartbroken, they regret, and more, they're going to be looking for someone to blame, and that's going to find its way into the courts.
Yes.
And we're starting to see that. But certainly these detransitioners, it is heartbreaking to see them having been convinced that they were a different gender and making permanent changes. I can't imagine. It's not like a car accident, Fred, where, oh, it's a tragedy. You know, you're permanently disfigured or you lose a leg or something like that. We all understand those things do happen in life. It's still tragic. But these are things that could have been prevented if these clinics and if these major hospitals and if the medical community had not jumped on board this train and pushed for kids to be allowed to do this. This could have all been prevented.
Oh, absolutely. And as you say, I hope more cases, that there's at least one case we dealt with in the last couple of weeks of a detransitioner is going to sue her doctors because she was very, very young and the doctors simply went along with it.
Right.
And the other side of this story now that has a lot of people alarmed, you have school districts, you have state governments that are saying kids, little kids, should be able to go to their school authorities and say, you know, a boy who says, I feel like a girl today, or a girl who feels like a boy, and that the parents should not be told, that it's all done in secret. That is alarming parents across the country. Mm-hmm. A state that is intervening, you know, we've talked about this before. In many school districts, you still have to call the parent if you want to give the kid an aspirin.
Right.
But now you have, especially in California, we're talking about here.
And but Colorado and some of these other places, too.
Yes. And parents, now California is taking it a step further. If a parent is opposed to what the kid wants to do, this 8-year-old or 9-year-old, they're going to hold the parents accountable.
Right.
Under law, it's going to be used in divorce cases, in custody cases.
If Gavin Newsom signs that bill, I think it's Senate Bill 957. If he signs that into law, it's passed both houses of Congress, houses of the legislature in California. Parents could lose custody.
Yes,
of their children. So these are states, and I believe this is what. The ideology is going to call for, even in conservative states, if they could get it passed. But they want to hide gender transitioning from the parents. It should be criminal, but
yep,
it's happening in some states. Mm-hmm. All right, folks, we are going to take a short break. Ed Vitagliano, Fred Jackson, Chris Woodward. We're discussing the news of the day. And we're going to take a short break, and we will be back in just a few minutes. Hope you'll join us. The medical establishment has been playing God with the lives of innocent babies for decades now. Many have grown callous because it seems surreal to think that over 64 million babies have been lost. Preborn will not stand silent, nor should we. We cannot stand by and let babies die at the hand of abortion. That's why Preborn exists, to stand up for those who cannot defend themselves. The only defense for these precious babies is their heartbeat, which begins at just 3 weeks and can be heard on ultrasound by 5 weeks. When a mother, making that ultimate choice, hears her baby's heartbeat and sees the precious life inside of her, the majority of the time, she will choose life. By sponsoring an ultrasound for a mother, you are being the voice of the preborn. Please join Preborn in the cause for life. For just $28, you can be the difference between the life and death of a child. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined by Fred Jackson and Chris Woodward. Chris, just to return us to the topic we spent a good portion of the first half hour on, and that is the Pray Vote Stand Conference. Is it called a conference?
Summit.
Summit. Mm-hmm. In Washington, D.C. It is an FRC event, Family Research Council event. AFA is a co-sponsor of it. But what other kind of insights did you glean from that gathering of conservatives?
Well, any mention of Trump and Supreme Court justices overturning of Roe, that all got huge rounds of applause because that was something people worked for, dreamed about. Some thought they'd never see the day that you might see Chiron at the bottom of the television screen saying Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. So anytime Trump, Supreme Court justices, abortion getting overturned, that all got huge rounds of applause. Tony Perkins praised him for that when Tony introduced Donald Trump Friday evening. So Trump comes out and he talks about how he withstood vicious attacks to get three Supreme Court justices on the court. That's an actual quote. He said he was, quote, proud to have been the most pro-life president in American history. A lot of people have applauded him for that. He applauded the atrocity, the overturning of the atrocity known as Roe v. Wade. That got a huge standing ovation. A lot of people were excited about that. Then Trump went on to say that he is, quote, four exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother, saying that's a very tough decision for some people. So Trump went on and made it known that he is for some exceptions in cases of abortion. And he kind of sort of doubled down on that during a sit-down interview with Meet the Press over the weekend. This is Donald Trump talking to Meet the Press about abortion and abortion bans in some states. Clip one.
Mr. President, I want to give voters who are going to be weighing in on this election a very clear sense of where
they
stand on this.
I think they're all going to like me. I think both sides are going to like me.
What's going to have to happen is you're going to have to, Kristen, please.
You're asking me a question. What's going to happen is you're going to come up with a number of weeks or months. You're going to come up with a number that's going to make people happy, because 92% of the Democrats don't want to see abortion after a certain period of time.
If a federal ban landed on your desk, if you were reelected, would you sign it at 15?
Are you talking about a complete ban?
A ban at 15 weeks.
Well, people are starting to think of 15 weeks. That seems to be a number that people are talking about right now.
Would you sign that?
I would sit down with both sides and I'd negotiate something, and we'll end up with peace on that issue for the first time in 52 years. I'm not going to say I would or I wouldn't. I mean, DeSantis is willing to sign a 5-week and 6-week ban.
Would you support that? You think that goes
I think
too
what
far?
He did is a terrible thing and a terrible mistake.
All right, Fred. So we want to be fair. We've mentioned that we want to be fair when we're dealing with candidates. So this is going to concern a lot of pro-life conservatives.
Yeah.
Now, let me just start off by saying President Trump is a pragmatic politician. So he does have principles. I'm not going to say he's unprincipled. But his best-selling book was The Art of the Deal. That's what he likes to do. He wants to make deals to try to get something done rather than nothing. Half a loaf rather than the whole loaf. So I understand that. I also understand that for a lot of people, even pro-life people, the idea of a woman carrying a baby who has become impregnated by rape or incest, that is an emotionally charged kind of idea. It's very rare, by the way, in terms of those actually seeking abortions, but in terms of the politics of it, that gets thrown around as if it's half the cases. But we saw Nikki Haley at the first debate say we don't have the votes in the Senate to get anything more than half a loaf, let's just put it that way. But I do think, I personally am only for the exception of the health of the mother, life of the mother, excuse me.
Yes.
But there are a lot of people who aren't sure. And I think that President Trump is reaching out to those people. But this is not going to go over well in the pro-life community. They want only that one exception. What are your feelings on this?
Yeah, I think, and our newsroom is getting reaction to what he had to say there on in the MSNBC interview or NBC Meet the Press. And here's why. You know, he's a businessman. And he talked about the issue of abortion as if somebody was talking about some kind of commodity.
Yeah.
That maybe we can come to a deal on gas prices.
Right.
Maybe we can come to a deal on, you know, electric vehicles.
Right.
Abortion is talking about a human life. And if, all respect for the former president, if you think you're going to come up with a compromise that's going to keep pro-abortion Democrats happy and pro-life Republicans happy.
That's a good point.
You're naive.
Nobody's going to be happy with that.
No one's going to be happy with that because we're talking about a human life. And the fact that the former president was accusatory against Governor DeSantis for wanting to put a six-week limit in there.
Right.
And what was the phrase that he used? That was a terrible thing?
It was
that,
a terrible mistake.
Terrible
thing
mistake.
And a terrible mistake.
Yes. If you're truly pro-life, life begins at conception. I agree with you. If the mother's life is truly in danger,
right,
not her quality of life.
Right, which her, is what health of the mother
yes,
usually...
It's code speak.
Yeah, code speak.
Yes. If the life of the mother is truly in danger, I agree with you on that. But we believe that life begins at conception. It is a human being. And I'm sorry, you don't negotiate around that. As Christians, we have to look at it as God looks at it.
Right.
That's a human being. And it is murder to take the life of
yep,
that innocent human being.
And to murder the child because a terrible crime was committed against the mother. We're all in agreement that's a terrible thing.
Yes.
But why does the baby get murdered?
That's right.
Over that.
So I think on that point, I think the former president is trying to bring a business mentality into it. And we don't believe you can do that when we're talking about human life.
And to your point, Fred, these views on this issue are mutually exclusive. So the real pro-life position from a Christian perspective is that it is a human life. A baby made in the image of God, that life is sacred. On the other side of the issue from the Democrats or the radical left, they don't care about that baby.
That's right.
They say it's the woman's body.
Mm.
And that's why they're not going to compromise on it either.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to say, okay, 6 weeks is too stringent. We'll go with the 15-week. No, they're going to want abortion allowed all the way up until birth. That is, I think, the majority position in the Democratic Party, even if people deny that that's their position.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's even a sizable segment of the Democratic Party that believes in partial birth abortion
yes,
as well. Mm-hmm. So
we've seen that through the years.
Yeah. Anything else on that particular topic?
Well, I do want to say next month marks 21 years that I've been in broadcasting, and in my experience, it's very difficult to please everybody.
Uh-huh. Yes, thank you. For that. That is absolutely true, whether you're ordering from a fast food restaurant or you're talking politics, absolutely.
Yeah. So, by the way, if you've not ordered from a fast food restaurant lately, don't forget your wallet, because it's not exactly what the kids call cheap anymore.
Oh, yeah, right.
Speaking of things that are not cheap, a lot of people are understandably having difficulty buying grocery stores if they even have a grocery store in their neighborhood. As we know, and we've talked about on this program, a number of cities have seen people and companies just pack up and close their shop and move because of crime and drugs and homelessness and stuff like that. Chicago, no stranger to this problem, although some would say that Chicago's problems are self-inflicted because the people they put in charge of fixing these things don't. And one of the ideas that Chicago now has, they're exploring the possibility, guys, of creating a municipally owned grocery store in Chicago after several major supermarket chains in their city recently closed their doors. I just shared the link for this in our Today's Issues Facebook page. I would imagine that some people out there might be concerned with a government controlling and owning a grocery store.
This would be government-owned?
Municipally owned, yes.
Well, Fred, you mentioned this in our story meeting. This is a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. You said this is a government-subsidized grocery store. It's essentially nationalizing mm-hmm. the food industry, the grocery store. This is a bad idea on a lot of levels. It puts privately owned grocery stores, and not just the big ones, but small mom-and-pop grocery stores, bodegas, and so on and so forth, it puts them in direct competition with the government.
Yes.
Which I don't see how that can be allowed, but if it's going to be tried out, it's going to be tried out in a Chicago or a Los Angeles. This is a terrible idea, and I don't see any good coming out of it.
Oh, absolutely not. And I mentioned in our story meeting last week, the Prime Minister of Canada, Trudeau, says he was calling in the five major grocery store chains in Canada mm-hmm. because he wants them to do something about food prices. And he says, if I can't get a deal, then the government will do something else.
And he left that threat vague.
Yes, hanging out there. This is the scary part about this is, and even, you know, Chicago is floating this idea out there. You put the government in charge of food supply. All right. The government starts saying, farmer, you're going to produce this amount of food. Consumer, this is what we're going to allow you to buy because we have to distribute the product across
equitably.
Mm-hmm. Equitably. All right. And a few years ago, people may have said, you guys are crazy.
That'll never happen.
That'll never happen. No. What we have seen in recent years is government creating a problem. Pandemic. Shut down schools. And their solution is more drastic than the problem.
Right.
It gives them, if you're a believer in socialism and Marxism, it's all about control over the people. If you're a believer in that, you take, never let a crisis go to waste. Was it Rahm Emanuel said that?
Right, I think so.
Yes, the former mayor of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Obama. And Obama said,
Obama administration.
Never let a crisis go to waste. So they create the problem. Everybody knows the reason the grocery prices are way up is because of fuel costs.
Yeah, and theft.
And theft, yes, in these major centers.
Right.
So you create the problem, the huge problem, the crisis out there by limiting fossil fuels. And so grocery prices go up, and then you say, well, we have to step in. The reason in Chicago is the amount of theft. The story, I'm not sure, it was at Fox Business mm-hmm. that you put up there?
Yes.
What has happened in Chicago is that Walmart has had to pull three stores out of, is it South Chicago, I believe it is?
So.
Because of theft. So the solution the government should have had was crack down on theft.
Yes.
That's what they should do, but they let the theft go. Now we're going to come in, and here's the solution. We're going to provide the groceries to you, all right? Keep the government out of that, and especially a commodity like food.
Right.
You know, once the government takes control of food, they've got control of the basic part of your life. Everybody needs food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let me tell you something else. I mean, there's so much that's wrong with this idea. But the privately owned stores and the corporate grocery chains that are pulling out of places like Chicago, all right, because of theft, you just highlighted that, laid that out perfectly, all right. So what do you think is going to happen to these government-owned grocery stores? You're going to have people showing up and just, it's going to become a food pantry.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to simply take what they want. The government will be in charge, and this will be to the disadvantage of other privately owned stores because the government is, the municipality is going to suck up all the resources,
mm-hmm.
and they will put strict regulations on what comes in, what goes out. But you're going to see, I just firmly believe this, you're going to see people just walking in and taking what they want. Well, who's going to go down the street and buy groceries
mm-hmm.
if you get it for free?
That's right.
Right.
This is a terrible idea. I don't know how the government could be allowed to take over and nationalize this. Well, nationalize. This, it's not nationalized, but it would be municipalized, however you might want to explain.
This is one of the failures, I think, of mainstream media. And I say that because when people see and hear news reports on this kind of issue, they only get like the headline or the general angle that somebody is trying to take. In other words, these greedy food companies.
Right.
But people need to understand that a grocery store, for example, we're talking about grocers, that owner of that grocery store is responsible for all sorts of stuff beyond the food prices. So he or she is facing state, local, state, and federal policies that determine how much his utilities cost. He's required to pay people a certain wage, in some cases far beyond the federal minimum wage, which is still in the $7 range. In some places, you're paying people $15 an hour, a minimum wage, to work at a grocery store. So, and he's responsible for all the unemployment insurance for that person, the Social Security benefits, all these things. And you're telling that person, after you've done all this to him to raise his ability to operate, you need to lower the money that you're going to make to try to claim a profit on it. And media never explores those angles. And I think part of the reason why is because it involves a lot of math. And people always try to stay away from stories that involve way too much numbers.
Also, I read it was either the tail end of last week or over the weekend that California is considering a bill that would force restaurants and especially fast food places to provide $20 an hour. Mm. Did you guys see this story?
Yes.
And there were spokespeople for like McDonald's and others saying, our franchise owners cannot afford that.
Right.
That is going to drive us out of business in mm-hmm. California. So you have that's another perfect example. If this is passed and implemented, you're going to have more government policies that are going to drive fast food places out of business mm-hmm. and out of California and out of these cities. And then where are people who are on the lower end of the economic scale going to get lunch? Mm-hmm. There are probably a lot of people who are close to poverty or just outside of it who feed their families with McDonald's. And if these places go out of business, it's not much different than the grocery stores going out of business in Chicago.
That's another failure of the media, because we've seen and heard the people saying, you know, they stand outside McDonald's headquarters with their $15 an hour signs or stuff like that, which they're free and entitled to do. But people don't realize that McDonald's doesn't own very many of the McDonald's locations of which you buy a Big Mac. It's the small business owner that pays dearly to be able to sell a Big Mac legally at a place called McDonald's. And that person can't afford to do $20 an hour when the minimum wage where he or she operates that McDonald's might only require $8 or $9 an hour.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, people don't realize, they get the news that like McDonald's says $20 an hour would be ridiculous when McDonald's is a $1 billion company. McDonald's is not setting that wage for that person at that, you know, flipping burgers. It's the small business guy.
Well, and we're seeing on another area of industry, we're seeing United Auto Workers rotating strikes right now.
Right.
Yeah.
And the president of the United States came out the other day and he said, hey, auto companies, you guys are making billions of dollars of profit. You can afford to pay these workers more. Well, the workers, they just turned down 21% at one of the big automakers.
21% increase.
Yes, in wages. Yep. They turned it down. They want at least 36%. Well, what does that do? Their businesses are in business to make a profit, all right? What's the point of being in business? You're there to make a living and to pay your people. What happens if these auto workers get a 36% increase? What's going to happen to the cost of cars? Electric vehicles are going to be just as much or more. Somebody was saying the other day, there was did we have this when we talked about it last week? It was a Ford F-150, a new one. I suppose it's all dressed. How much was it?
Well, this is Brent Creeley, our producer. We were talking about it.
Yeah.
He texted me a couple of screenshots.
Uh-huh.
Now, one of these Ford F-150s was a fully loaded model.
Yeah.
But it was $80,000. The same truck, not quite as many bells and whistles, over $67,000.
Yeah. So how do most Americans support that? I'm old enough to remember you could buy a house for $67,000,
yeah.
You know? And so now a vehicle and your insurance on top of that, all of that sort of thing, people...
How do you pay for the insurance for a vehicle that to replace it?
Yes.
The insurance company has to fork over $67,000 or thereabouts. I know there's depreciation, but... Your insurance goes through the roof. Your car tag. In a lot of states, it's a percentage of the value of the vehicle. People are being priced. The middle class is being priced out of the American dream.
Some states, you got to get two tags.
Yeah, let alone young people just getting out of college.
Well, but it's a popular tactic on the left. You demonize the owner.
Right.
You know, oh, look at you. You know, you live in this four-bedroom house. This guy over here who works for you cannot afford an apartment. Therefore, you must pay him more. But that just jacks up the price of the commodity that's trying to be sold. So fewer people can afford to go to a McDonald's or a Wendy's or whatever the case may be. This socialism doesn't work.
Right.
That's the bottom line. The way that the beauty of capitalism is, all right, whoever wants to open up a hamburger joint can.
Right.
All right. Then you have competition.
Right.
That, you know, George's place down the street will pay their employee $8. That's $2 more than the $6 joint down here. So employee A is going to move over there. It works.
I think most Americans who understand the power of the capitalist model, and I'm in this camp, I am fine with some government regulation. In other words, you got to have a clean hamburger place.
Sure.
The health department has to, you have to have inspections.
Yes.
Yeah, the meat has to be a certain quality, you know, those kinds of things. But after that, you let them duke it out.
Fight it out.
Fight it out. Mm. And that's the best for the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have the kind of restrictions that protect the health and well-being of the customer.
Yep.
So, all right, we're down to a minute and a half or so. What do you got, Chris, that we can fill out the hour with?
Yes.
Get anything?
While I was at the Pray Vote Stand Summit, I did have a few minutes to visit with Sonia Shaw, the president of the Chino Valley School Board. She is the president of the school board that Attorney General Rob Bonta is suing because this school board took it upon itself to require teachers in its school district to tell parents if their child wanted to transition at school. Attorney General Bonta is suing Chino Valley about this, although there's like seven school districts now that have the same policy. But Sonia Shaw took a stand, and she encouraged others to join her in taking a stand in California or other parts of the country. Clip 5.
The time is now where God has called us to take the stand for our kids, to protect our children. And you have people linking all over. And that's all it takes is for you to say, hey, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm.
since you've been in the news, have you still been getting, you know, like emails or phone calls from people that say, hey, I appreciate what you're doing, or you've inspired me, or things like that?
Absolutely. And actually calls from other parts of the world now, which I think is beautiful. And the stack of letters that I have to respond to, beautiful handwritten cards and postcards, are now from all over the nation. And I think that's a representation of how important it is right now and how aware of people are that we do need to take the stand. I mean, it's really beautiful when not only do you get phone calls to the district, to my personal cell phone, to my social media, to our board secretary, and you also get all these written responses as well. That shows you people want people to stand up. We just need more to do that.
Okay.
Fred, you have been on this issue ever since Virginia was basically flipped from a blue state, or at least purple, to a little bit more red. This is an issue that's kind of a sleeper issue. You're not exactly, we can't exactly be sure how much this is going to matter on election day, but it is going to matter.
Absolutely. And what happened in Virginia, to take note, is that, you know, I've said it before, Democrats love their kids too.
Right.
And if your school district is going to allow a boy who says he's a girl into a girl's washroom, a Democrat parent gets pretty upset about that too. And that's what we saw happen in Virginia. What Ron DeSantis is doing in Florida for parental rights, I think that's going to be a huge issue across the country.
Yeah, we heard Missouri, Texas, others are taking this issue very seriously, as they should. All right, folks, we're going to take a five-minute break for news. When we come back, Fred Jackson and I will welcome Steve Jordahl. Yes, Steve Paisley Jordahl will be joining us from the 11:05 to 11:30 segment. Please join us. 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.